cliffcentral.com.
Hey, the Ducker couple are here. I want to meet these people and have them sit down and get comfortable. We got a really interesting couple of minutes with them ahead, I hope. Have a seat. Do you mind being called the Ducker couple?
We love being called the Ducker couple.
You like that, huh? Right, come on, sit down, make yourselves comfortable. Let me figure out what microphones we're all on here. There we go. All right, so what are your names so that I can at least...
What are our names?
Julian and Myrtle.
You didn't tell me this.
He did some homework.
Did you not get the thing?
He did his homework.
You've given me nothing. Bring it all here, Damon.
I emailed you everything.
Bring it here, please. You gave me nothing. Useless, as usual. What is this you have brought for me?
Propaganda.
Oh, good.
Just some stickers and bumper stickers and stuff.
I love Ducha.
Yeah, I know, you see. So what you do is you go into the McDonald's, into the gents, and you just plaster them everywhere.
That's
just to get
great.
The conversation going.
But you know what I love is here you've got I Am Not a Criminal.
Right.
www. You've got your own website, duchacouple.co.za.
Yeah, we're not criminals. How could we possibly be criminals by using a cannabis plant in the privacy of our own home? It just doesn't make any sense.
I met you guys, well, I heard you on Gary's show. I mentioned this just now for the first time in a little while ago.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that you made such a good case. You seem to be really good, upstanding members of the community who want nothing more than to not be prosecuted and to not be bullied for doing what any free person should be able to do in the privacy of their own home.
Quite right.
Other people are allowed to drink themselves into a complete stupor, do outrageous and dangerous things under the influence of alcohol.
Yeah.
And they don't go to jail.
And how's your porno story this morning? That's all completely legal.
Of course it is.
Maybe it's sort of borderline illegal, some of it, but it's completely condoned in society.
If you grow a little bit of dacha at home, and you are the sort of person who imbibes every now and then, I don't, but I have no problem with people who do, how could you possibly be more dangerous than someone who's drunk?
Right.
And the father of... three children and the abusive partner to a wife and all these other things that we hear. You know, alcohol, they say, costs this economy billions every year in terms of its negative influences. Now, I do drink, but because I don't smoke, I'm reticent to be judgmental of it. I don't know what it does. I don't know how it feels. We'll get into all of that later on. Your lives have been dedicated to...
it.
To Ducha, right?
Well, we're not dedicated to Ducha for the last... I've been using it for 30 years, but I don't dedicate myself to it. But right now, we are at the forefront of trying to change the South African legal horizons.
How are we doing on that front?
We're doing really well. It's a full steam ahead now to our High Court trial, which is in Pretoria. It starts on the 10th of March, 2016. We've gone through a huge long set of postponements, but now this is it. That is D-Day. So we're busy getting expert witnesses in. It's a huge thing putting together a trial. What do we know about
this? It's expensive, isn't it?
It's incredibly expensive.
It's the bane of our lives. Yeah. The money, honey. Yeah, big time. It's we're always looking for money. We're social activists, so by extension, we're really poor, because all social activists are, really.
Mm.
So if our ballpark figure to really host a world-class trial, because we'd like to stream it live over the internet, getting all of our expert witnesses, lots of locals, some overseas experts, our ballpark figure is 5 million rand. And when you see the figures bantered around there for other trials, it's actually not very much. But 5 million rand for us is kind of insurmountable.
Well, Oscar Pistorius' trial cost something like 12 million, didn't it?
Yeah. This probably won't go on as long. It's a little bit more cut and dry.
Is this a civil suit that you've brought, or is this a continuation of the criminal charges that started the whole process?
No, it's a civil suit. What we did in 2011 is we turned the whole thing on its head, because we were obviously defending ourselves against the state was charging us
with
breaking the law.
Yeah.
And so we turned it on its head and we sued the government. So we've sued 7 government departments. Now they have to answer to us as to why they are enacting these laws.
Where did you two meet?
Ah.
How did this whole thing start?
We met at Rustler's Valley.
Remember that place?
Rustler's Valley.
Maybe too young.
I think it was...
No, Rustler's Valley was an enclave full of very, very colourful people. And Myrtle,
hippies, right?
Right, that's what I meant to say. And Myrtle ran the restaurant there for years, and if it wasn't for Myrtle, we'd have all got all sorts of... we wouldn't have done well on a long weekend at Rustler's Hedonism kicked in at Rustler's. We all did very, very well. We stayed up for days and days on end, and Myrtle cooked for us in the end. And she's still the most amazing chef in the whole world, and I don't know why I'm not 90 kilograms, actually.
So she kept you alive?
Basically,
you and other people.
That's right.
Wow, Myrtle. Where is Rustler's Valley? I don't know.
It's just outside Ficksburg in the Free State on the Lesotho border.
Oh, yeah. Damon, you've been there?
Yeah, well, it's the Rustler's Valley Festival every year.
Yeah.
It's not anymore now because the farm's been sold.
I was there in 1995. And I'm a bit traumatized still because the toilets were basically inside this little corral surrounded by, like, wood. And the toilets were arranged in a circle.
So you would watch other people taking the shit?
And everyone would sit on the toilet looking at each other.
It was communal.
I refused. I went to the hotel once. I made one power move the whole weekend. I did it at the hotel. I saw a pair of pants near the one toilet. I still never forget that.
Well, thank you for that vivid memory.
Very vivid, huh? Damon, won't you just sort out headphones for Myrtle here, please? My God, I mean, you've been away for a week and you've forgotten the rules.
Oh, here we go.
Thank you. Jesus, you have to worry about your own headphones. Are we running a professional show here? Or since you've been sick, you've also lost the ability to make things work? Huh? Please, can we figure this out? So you two met there at Rustler's Valley?
Yeah.
Yes, we've been together for nearly 9 years now.
And Julian, how did you end up there? Were you just there with a bunch of friends?
We used to go every year as a pilgrimage to let our hair down, basically. It was a four-day festival, and there wasn't any phones in those days. In fact, if there was a phone, there wasn't any signal. There probably still isn't there. It's a remote place. And we just used to have a reboot and a defrag, basically, and... just let our hair down, as I said.
Okay, but now explain to me when you say hedonism. What went on here?
Parties, matey. Parties all night long. And we took all sorts of things to learn about ourselves. I mean, we talk, as a Ducker couple, we are talking about a cannabis fight here, and we've got to stick to cannabis. This is our fight.
Sure.
But prohibition is a crock for whatever substance.
Of course
substance,
it is.
Yeah?
And it's failed everywhere.
It's failed everywhere, and it's failing dramatically here as well. So over those years, when we were in our 30s and early 40s, we went for broke. We took substances to find out, and now we have an opinion, and now we're getting older, and now we've walked away from that lot, really, and now we're just very, very focused on changing the universe here.
But you both look like such... morally upstanding members of the community. Does that mess with the argument from the opposition? Because they always try to cast you, I imagine, as lunatics.
Yes, it does, definitely. It is actually, because we're such kind of average middle-aged, middle-class white South Africans, it got us started on this road. The first kind of activist, in inverted commas, that we met said, yeah. Oh, but you're perfect for this job. You're perfect. You don't have children. Look how normal you are. Look, you're not down and out. You're not on the couch all the time. So it's kind of, that's what got us into this thing in the beginning.
Yeah, I really, when I first heard about the Dacha couple, I expected a pair of stoners who...
Well, we are.
No.
But I've got a 40-rand jacket on today.
Well, no. The point is that I thought that you'd come in here and you'd be high as could be, and that you were the kind of... socially irresponsible people that I do know some of my friends who they smoke too much weed and they're just not particularly useful members of society, but I don't think that's the weed's fault. They would have been that way anyway.
The weed just exacerbates it. The weed just brings it all out.
So let's talk about Dacha for a minute, and then we can get more into you two, because I think you're interesting people nonetheless. Even if you weren't the Dacha couple, you'd be famous for other reasons, I think.
Infamous.
Probably. What is the problem with marijuana? Why does it get treated differently to tobacco, for example?
Sure. Right back at the very, very beginning. Let's take it back to the 1920s in America.
Right. Prohibition.
Prohibition. That's what started it. And there were so many people in America as industrialists saw the hemp plant as being... it's going to cut into the cotton fields. If you've got a cotton plantation and you start growing hemp, cotton's going to go downhill. If you start growing hemp for trees, to make magazines and books, the paper industry's going to go down. So those two industries, the leaders in those industries, the Randolph Hearsts and Co., they lobbied government with a huge amount of money, and basically the government in 1933 in America slapped a tax on marijuana. So you couldn't grow it unless you had a tax stamp, but they never issued any.
Now, before that, because I love a bit of history and a bit of context, before that, anyone could grow it?
It was ditchweed, as they call it. It was all over the place.
And people, where were people smoking this? All over the world?
No, not really. It wasn't the actual smoking of marijuana. Only really came to the fore in America in the 60s with the hippies and all of that.
So it was only
that.
Really discovered then as a mainstream yes. kind of thing yes. that
but
anyone
in,
could...
In South Africa, the plant has been used for over 700 years. And the first actual law, local law, was enacted in 1878 in what's now KZN. Mm-hmm. What happened is that they brought all of these Indian laborers over from India and this indentured
slaves.
System.
Slavery, yeah.
Slaves, yeah. And this
to
was happening
sugar.
At the same time in Jamaica. With the histories are exactly parallel. Now, the colonial rulers at the time were all Christian, and they didn't like the fact that all of these Indians were Hindus and wanted to convert them to Christianity.
Right.
So what the best thing to do is, in religious terms, is to take away the sacrament. And so they banned the use of cannabis for any Indians only. Huh. And it was one British medical doctor who did that in South Africa. So then it was banned, and then in the early 20th century, there was the Opium Wars
in the East.
Okay, so then they decided that they needed an international law against opiates, basically. Mm-hmm. Mind-altering substances. So there was this directive sent around all around the world. Okay, we're going to ban A, B, C, and D in the drug world. And then South Africa stuck up their hand and said, oh, no. What? You've forgotten about this plant. You've forgotten about this cannabis sativa plant. You need to put it on the list too.
Damn.
And so that's
basically how it
South
happened.
Africa's
just like
fault.
That.
It's our fault.
It's
the
exactly
whole world.
South Africans' fault. They pestered the. It was called the Vienna Accord in 1923, and they had opium and heroin and all of the derivatives and the analogues of opium. And two people stood up. One was the king of Egypt at the time, and said, "But I've got this stuff called hashish that makes all of my population completely nuts. So that should be on the list." And then South Africa said, "Well, while you're at it, look at this stuff here. This makes Indians go loopy." So that is why it got signed into legislation that it's not even meant to be in that form of legislation, because it was about opium at the time. So this is all ideology, Gareth. It's not got no science basis whatsoever.
Now, you say it was being used here 700 years ago. Indigenous black communities were smoking it and growing it?
Not necessarily. Growing it for sure, but not necessarily smoking it. They would eat it and make a tea.
Oh.
It was the Dutch settlers that introduced the whole idea of smoking and tobacco and all of that to the Khoisan people. Yeah.
And was it the Khoisan people who were growing it and smoking and drinking it in tea?
Yes. It had been brought down the eastern seaboard by the Arab traders.
Ha. Huh.
But if you have a look at our little movie, it's called Dacha the Truth. It gives you the whole history of Dacha in Southern Africa.
No, this is my first meeting with you, so there'll be lots of research after the fact. Okay, so your campaign now is to redress the imbalances of the past, effectively, because South Africa screwed up.
It's the last apartheid law.
That's what we call it.
Yeah.
It's the last bastion of apartheid, because these laws that we're fighting now were cut and paste from the 1950s. The laws haven't changed. They just added a few more substances over the years. But the 1972, it ended up being called the Weed Law. 78,000 black men were arrested in 6 months after the Weed Law was passed. And it was basically to control a section of the population. It had nothing to do with weed. It had nothing to do with the dangers of weed. It's all about social manipulation. That's prohibition in a nutshell.
Do you find that you have a huge amount of support in this country from ordinary people who want...
They're coming out the closet, slowly but surely. More and more professional people are coming out. There's a whole bunch of kids out there that don't care what people think about their cannabis use. What we're trying to get is more fine, upstanding people like ourselves to come out and say, listen, I'm a professional, I work well, I love my family, I love my kids, I love my job, my life is great. Oh, by the way, did I tell you I smoke cannabis in the evenings?
You know what? I don't smoke it, but I support you wholeheartedly.
Thank you
very
much.
You can add me to your register of supporters.
Excellent.
I think that it's ridiculous that adult human beings shouldn't be able to decide what they want to put into their bodies.
Well, that's the crux of our argument.
It's not going to kill you. The medical community are very divided on the issue.
They're protecting their interests, a lot of them, eh?
And big pharmaceutical companies clearly don't want a cheap, homegrown alternative to anything. So they want you to take pills.
Mm.
I understand
or,
there must
or
be
they
a,
want
an agenda on that part.
Or the pharmaceutical companies want to keep it illegal for enough time so that they can get in through the back door. with the Department of Health and established big pharmaceutical
marijuana plantations
and then keep it illegal for everybody else so that they can sell it.
This is happening in the UK as we speak with a product called Sativex.
Yeah.
There's a corporation called GW Pharmaceuticals. For the last 5 years, they've been growing really dank bud in a warehouse in an undisclosed location and selling it worldwide with FDA approval. It is cannabis sativa in a tincture. You could do it in your kitchen. I could do it in my kitchen. It is not rocket science in any form, but they are on the stock exchange. They are condoned by the government in the UK, but the UK the penal system is fuller than it ever has been in the history of UK prisons.
How many people in South Africa do you think are arrested and held on charges of possession of marijuana?
We've done some picking apart of the statistics, and as far as on local magistrates court level, 1,000 Dacha cases are heard per day.
At least. We reckon up to 1,400 cases a day. And here's it. How's this for a statistic? In 2013, there were 127,000 arrests in Gauteng for Dacha related.
Hang on a second.
127,000 drug related arrests, of which 99% were Dacha. And there have been so far since...
In one year,
just in Gauteng, 127,000 dockets were opened for drug offences, and there so far have only been 63 convictions.
My God, what a waste of time.
It's complete lunacy.
And it also punishes the people. You know, once you've had the police raid your home, go through your car, locked you up, made you freeze in the stinking cell for usually on the weekend.
Mostly
the arrests are on Thursdays and Fridays. They stick you there for the weekend. You're absolutely terrified.
Yeah.
You come out, you go to court. By that time, you know, you've been punished.
You're traumatized.
Then it goes on and on and on. And
all right, let me try and be... representative of the opposing view here.
Yeah.
So people who say that this is the gateway drug.
Mm.
And that once you start down this dark path, then it leads you to other things.
Yeah.
And ultimately, before you know, you're addicted to heroin, and you're shooting up. And
injecting under your toenails.
Exactly.
So what
do you make of that? Is there an argument
to
be made?
We get asked it all the time, as you can imagine. The gateway. It's been a really, really great piece of propaganda. It was first spoken by a man called Harry Anslinger, who was the very first main man at the drug, what's now the DEA in America. And he called it the gateway to harder stuff, and it has stuck. And you know what, Gareth? For some people, it may actually be true. Some people will start on something and it'll be a natural progression because that's just how they are. Some people might start on cocaine and go backwards to ganja. There is no basis of this gateway theory. People start on something. You might have started on stealing your father's cigarettes. Mm. That gravitated you to smoking something else. Nobody ever talks about alcohol being a gateway. How much alcohol is in South African homes that kids can get hold of? Steal a few six packs and get going on that. So this gateway theory is an absolute load of baloney. But as I say, there are the odd people who just shouldn't be smoking it. And if they do get hold of it, they might want to just get a bigger, better, faster, quicker fix. So,
well, on that note, Josh says on WeChat, ask the Dacha couple where I can get the good stuff and not this crappy grass that car guards sell.
Ah, well, that's a little bit out of our frame of reference, as you can imagine. Sorry about that, matey. We can't help you on that one.
Oh, what a pity.
Not yet.
What about the other argument that I've heard a lot of people saying that it triggers schizophrenia?
Well, there was in 1961, there was a report in the UK called the Keel Report, which studied thousands and thousands and thousands.
It's actually 600,000 people.
600,000.
Wow.
Cannabis
over 15
users.
Years.
And they tracked the statistics for cannabis use, which has increased worldwide exponentially over the last 20, 30 years. And they studied the statistics for schizophrenia and various other mental disorders. And they found that there was absolutely no correlation. Now, we estimate that approximately 20 million people in South Africa have used or use this plant regularly. Where's all the schizophrenics?
Right. Mm. You know, another analogy, in 1897, they opened Falkenberg Mental Hospital in the Cape.
Yes.
And it was opened by the same lieutenant colonel that started the prohibition in Natal. And at that point, when he opened the doors in 1897, he had a list of seven different Dacha psychoses, from not very freaked out to extremely freaked out. Mm-hmm. And what they couldn't figure was, it was all temporary. They used to lock people up left, right, and center for being on cannabis because it appeared to them that they were psycho. They were nuts. They were going schizophrenic. But they weren't. They were just smoking a very strong psychotropic plant. So they'd lock them up in Falkenberg, and the next morning they were all as right as rain. It's a very temporary measure, being stoned. If you do have some sort of trigger and you smoke too much, or you just shouldn't be smoking it, or you smoke it on alcohol and you go green, that is what the prohibitionists call a psychotic episode. And so that's what we're trying to fight, the normality.
Right, explain this to me, because I don't know any of this terminology. So what's going green?
You know, if you have too much whiskey, you don't go green. You probably go pink, and then you go gray, and then you start puking everywhere. With cannabis, the colloquial expression is to go green. So if you have too much cannabis in one hit, you're in the wrong place, the wrong time, the wrong cannabis, or you've got a skin full of drink, you will suffer. You will get very, very
paranoid.
No. Well, you may if you are naturally quite paranoid. It will accentuate absolutely every part of your psyche. If you are naturally prone to paranoia, cannabis will bring it on. If you are naturally prone to anxiety, the chances are smoking cannabis might exacerbate it. But for other people, you know, they get anxious, they smoke cannabis to calm themselves down. So this is the misnomer with cannabis. You can't actually lock it down to doing anything specific. It has different strokes for different folks.
Well, you know, I think there are going to be a lot of people who have some questions on this, and I didn't expect you to be doctors on this, but I think you've done your research. What do we know about the medical indications around this? What does it actually do to you?
Well, cannabis works on your body's cannabinoid system. This is a built-in system that is designed to, its cannabinoid receptors receive the alkaloids from the plant. And what the cannabinoid system does is it balances out your body's natural systems, all of your vital organs.
Mm-hmm.
So it helps things like your immune system. It helps your blood. It helps your nervous system. It's not as if the cannabis, you take the cannabis and it goes straight to treat that particular tumor on your lung. Mm-hmm. What it will do is help your body to fight whatever it needs to fight. So it's very
what
general.
You're saying is it's generally a good thing.
Yes.
It's incredibly good preventative medicine. That's our mantra. It's our hashtag forever. It's in our founding affidavit.
You two look very healthy.
Well,
we
don't have doctors. We don't have prescriptions. We don't have anything of the sort. We actually don't have any medical aid because we are really, really imbalanced because we use quite a lot of cannabis. And we believe since day one, this is what we've believed all our lives, that the cannabis is doing us good every time we use it. It is preventative medicine. So you're talking about using it as medicine for the sick. We're using it as medicine so we don't get sick. And I wish people would listen to us because it's the truth.
Do you think that most people feel this way about Dacha?
Everyone's in the closet in South Africa.
It depends upon... When
you say that, I mean, do you mean you've got high-profile business people?
Yeah.
You've got politicians.
Yes.
Absolutely. They're all using it behind closed doors, and it's too scary for them to contemplate coming out about it. They'll lose their jobs, they'll lose their wife, they'll lose their homes, they'll lose their reputations, which is the biggest part of it.
Do you think they will, though? Is smoking weed so taboo?
Oh, completely. We know so.
Well, in people's minds, it is.
So these people come up to you and they say, "Oh, we support you, but don't tell anyone."
That's right.
Yes, we were at a breakfast with one of our benefactors the other day, and I said to him, "You know, come on, you know, you've got tons of money, and all of your friends have got tons of money. You know, these rich people, they stick together." And I said,
right.
"Now, how about if I put together a really nice breakfast at a lovely venue, and you bring six or eight of your friends, so that we can tell them the story." You know, because it's very difficult to get face to face with people, and that's got real value. And the answer was, oh, no. They would never be seen together supporting. They would separately, they would support the cause. But I couldn't bring them together and buy them all a lovely breakfast, because then they would be seen to supporting us together. And then,
Is that a South African thing? I mean, because South Africans are also very closed to close to. They're not very open about all kinds of things.
Yes.
Race. Mm-hmm. We're not comfortable about sex. We're not even comfortable about discussing politics with each other a lot of the time. Is this because of this Calvinism and this brainwashing that we were all put through?
Yes, I think it is. It's got a lot to do with religion.
Apartheid's claws are still in us.
Absolutely.
Yes, it is.
There's a long way to go, yeah.
People are scared of getting into trouble. Mm. You know, it also thinks, you know, most of us who are sort of in our 40s and 50s were brought up with a very, very strict school system. You know, and we still have this kind of headmaster paranoia that we're going to be hauled into the office
and
get into trouble, and Big Brother is watching us. And but we're getting there.
So what did it for you? Because I imagine when you met at Rustler's Valley all those years ago, the last thing you wanted was to become, first of all, to get involved and end up being known as the Dacha couple.
Well,
And then to dedicate your life to this. I mean, for you, it was probably a pastime at that stage.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, we've always, you know, even before we were together, I think we both separately always, you know, grew a little bit of weed in the garden. Well, what happened is that the cops arrived. And, I mean, for a long time after our arrest, we...
How did you there was a romantic interest straight away? What happened?
No, yeah. Not at all. No,
we were friends for a long time before. And then I decided to get back in the loop, because I was living out there in a house on the mountain, and
so you were removed
young
from society.
Yeah, so I decided, no, I need to get back into the loop. So I moved back to Joburg. Jules offered me a place to stay, and the rest is history. But, you know, the cops arrived at our house at 2 o'clock in the morning. I mean, it was just like
who do you think sold you down the road?
Well, we kind of know. We think it was some youngsters, and this is what always happens with Dacha arrests. Either it's opportunists, like you get stopped in a roadblock, or it's somebody snitching on you. And usually then when it's reported in the papers, they'll say, oh, after 11-month investigation, la, la, la. It's not. It's all snitches. Because what they do is they get some youngster on a cat or a coke charge or maybe even a weed charge, and they said, right, tell us where you got it, and then you can go. And then, so somebody obviously had been in our place. You know, our home's quite public. We have, you know, we hire it as a venue and whatever. So it was obviously some youngsters who had their balls in a vice. And,
right. And so they sold you.
Yeah.
So it was 5 hours. We were scantily clad. It was freezing cold. They wouldn't let me put my glasses on. And I literally had a piece of steel in the form of a gun in my cheek for 4 hours. Literally, four hours.
For weed.
Oh, no, they turned our place upside down, dude. They turned it upside down in 5 hours. They checked everything. They beat up my gardener. He didn't know a single thing about anything. And as it got light, a really weird thing happened. The main man, the main investigator, he saw an email address on the kitchen table in a book, in a diary. And everything changed at that point. What have you got this email address for? And it actually happened to be his ex-girlfriend's. And she'd had a function at our property before. So he rang her while we were present. And she gave the biggest character reference of our lives. She said, there's no way those guys are dealers. This is Jules and Myrtle. They live at the Jazz Farm. They're normal people. And from that point on, it all changed. And we were sent to Mulder's Rift Jail. And we spent a number of hours in there. And we talked our way out of that one on £1,000 bail, and to this day we are on £1,000 bail from the state nearly 5 years later. And we've turned the tables. Now we're the plaintiff and the government is the defendant.
Do you think they're running scared? Do you think that they're mounting a massive case against you?
The last time we met up with the state late last year to have a pre-trial conference to see what we're going to not agree on, that's why we postponed it. We got a postponement for another year because they just don't know which way around to do it. Because, you know, this is the first time the plant has ever been on trial in the world. Mm. Normally, people are trying to get off a charge or on appeal. They've been convicted. Now they're appealing for their human rights. Well, we haven't got anything. We're not stuck with anything. We've got a clean sheet. Our case has been struck off the roll. So we're not being charged with anything at the moment, which gives us a clear conscience to go for this. And we have billed it as the trial of the plant. We are going to televise it. It is going to get broadcast around the world. And we have told the state, bring your best team because we need a strong defense so we can thrash this out forevermore. So once and for all, we can put the cannabis plant to rest. Because as you said earlier on, there's just too much talk about cannabis. Let's get on to something else now. It's boring now. It's only a plant. Let's deal with some really heavy stuff that's happening in South Africa, because there's some very heavy stuff going on.
I can't believe I'm still shocked at the number of arrests that were conducted in you said 2013?
2013 in Gauteng, 127,000. Dockets opened. It's lunacy. How work that out per day?
That's a lot of paperwork and manpower and wasted time.
It's a lot of energy going on to something when people are getting their houses robbed and everything else. They're on a Dhaka bust in a roadblock. Yeah.
Just this morning when we were having a coffee waiting for the show, five phone calls, organizing lawyers for this person here and that person there. And we've got two cases in Caledon this morning. We've got another case in Cape Town. We've got three cases in Joburg, people that were arrested Thursday and Friday morning. I mean, that's seven or eight over a weekend, but that's only the people that know about us and the people that contacted us, you know.
I wonder... Here's someone who says, for example, why don't you get the dealers to fund the legal costs, Benita?
That's a very good idea, but they never come out the closet either.
For the dealers and Dhaka farmers, it's an investment. But is there an interest also in keeping it illegal for some of those people?
Yes, there is.
Because then they have control. It's a very underworld sort of thing.
There is, and they fear what we think is definitely going to happen is that after it's legal, the bottom's going to fall out the price. Mm. That is why most of the traders and growers but a lot of traders and growers are against it being legal, because they have their little niche, they're paying off the cops, they have their lawyer in their pocket, and so they're sitting pretty selling it at 200 rand a gram. I mean, can you believe that you will pay 200 rand a gram? And I mean, in the old days it used to be 20 rand for a bankie, and that's 10 grams. Now 1 gram is 200 rand.
Is that the current cost?
That's the going end, price of the top end.
All right, what kinds of weed do we get? I mean, what's on the menu?
Okay, so you get two main strains that are smokable. You know, you have the hemp varieties that are used for industry, and then the two main strains are indica and sativa. Mm-hmm. The sativa is by far the most common strain. The indica is what's known as the more medicinal strain. That's the one that's going to put you on the couch.
Okay? Oh, wow. Okay. So that chills you the hell out.
And it's usually indica strains that are used for medicine. Sativa strains used more for you know, adults.
Recreational
use.
Purposes.
We don't use the word recreational.
Not.
It's no, adult no. use.
Responsible adult use. Get away from recreational, because...
Hey, I don't know. I'm
yeah, no, look, the argument about
I'm
recreational...
I'm being admonished by you two.
Yeah, look, well, think about it. Recreational use opens up this whole quagmire of children using it.
Yeah, but children, protecting the children is an excuse governments use a lot of the time to stop adults from doing what they want.
I was going to say that.
Mm. No, it's going on with the Film and Publications Board
what
now.
What about the adults, Gareth?
Look, I'm on your side on this one. I really don't think there's much to be discussed, but I think that there are lots of people who are opposed to you.
Yes,
I think that there are lots of people who like rules the way they are, that are paranoid about their own families being affected negatively by this, where their own families already might be. They just don't know it.
Well, can I answer that by saying there's a really, really miserable cop in Cape Town. He's a detective with the narcotics unit, and over the years he has bust everybody. And he actually bust the director of our non-profit company. And this is 18 months ago, and he's a really miserable sod. And last week he came back to the man who he arrested and said, listen, I know somebody with cancer. Can you get me some cannabis oil to cure the cancer? So now Big Bad Bill is Sweet William now, you know. Just wait till he gets sick.
So it's hypocrisy. It's the worst kind.
Or wait until your teenage son is put through the mill at the local police station.
But is it a problem with young people? I mean, do we have abuse among young people in this country?
There is certainly a certain amount of abuse. There's teenagers who wake and bake, as we call it, before they go to school. It's not a good idea. You know, you're not going to concentrate at school if you're all goofed.
Yeah.
But then teenagers have been baking cookies and taking them to school for generations and generations. It will happen with all sorts of substances.
It's forbidden fruit stuff. If you say to them, no, you shouldn't, what are they going to do? Mm. Of course they're going to. You did, I did. It's human nature.
You know, it's so funny. I remember my dad saying to me when we were kids, there's the liquor cabinet. If you want something, just ask me.
Right.
Well, ask me and I'll let you have as much as you want. And I remember I just never wanted it because he said you could have it. Just ask.
Exactly.
And a lot of my friends were saying, oh, you know, they would steal from their dad's liquor cabinet or whatever. And it was a big thing. It was a thrill for them.
Right.
And I never understood the thrill because there wouldn't be a thrill for me.
Well, we think that lots of people start using the cannabis plant late teens, in matric, tertiary education. I don't think it does any harm. It does everything to you. You find out about yourself, as the man said, Bob Marley said, it will reveal you to yourself. It's a part of experimentation, and all of this, all the fear mongering about the youth using the plant, they're only using it to piss off their parents most of the time, and they're going to finish anyway. Loads and loads of people start smoking cannabis and then stop. Early 20s, they get a wife, they get some kids, then it all goes, they stop for the sake of the children and the family or the wife or the husband or whatever it may be.
And so, because they stop, because it's illegal.
Yeah.
Because
they don't want the stigma.
It becomes too much at stake. If you're a student, you maybe don't have too much at stake if you're keeping up with your work. But the minute you enter the professional world and families and all of that, the stakes are higher. And that's usually
why
people
don't have kids.
No.
No, we're allergic to children.
Yeah. Yeah, especially other people's.
It's a genuine medical condition. Cured
by cannabis.
Lissetti says here, Gareth, I don't believe this. What have this couple achieved in life? What charity have they supported?
What?
I don't know. That's Lissetti's
point.
What
charity have I supported? I don't think, absolutely blatantly, there's an Avaaz petition every now and again. I'm into human rights for everybody. And if there's a petition about people persecuting gays around the world, I'm there. I will donate money to anybody who persecutes people for their sexual preference. So
who doesn't?
Who does? Sorry. sorry about that. Yeah, thank you for that. So
don't worry, he's high.
I'm not quite sure what the question.
Well, I think that by virtue of the work that we do with our nonprofit organization, Lissetti, I was just saying earlier that I spend most of the time in the car between home and here speaking to lawyers, speaking to people who were in court this morning. We help people who've been persecuted through these laws. So in the past year, I can give you a whole big long list of the good things that we've done, but that's irrelevant. At the moment, we are helping people on the ground and
who are being arrested for possession.
Who are being arrested for possession and really going through hell. Wait until it happens to you.
Theo says that's just the docket arrest number that you gave. In our area, people get arrested and they go through the bribery mode. Some cops will hustle you for big bribes and it scares you a lot.
Absolutely. Yeah, yes. No, we're just talking about official dockets. We're not talking about getting hustled within 20, 50 meters of this building on Vessels Road. I remember an occasion working on a movie set down the road here at a well-known movie studios with a colleague. He looks a bit scaly, this colleague. He's got some studs and chains and tattoos and stuff and weird clothes. They picked him up at his baccy, and it smelt of dacha in his baccy. They knew that the man would be smoking cannabis, and they whizzed him off to an auto bank. And at gunpoint, they made him withdraw 2,000 rand there and then, and it was a cash deal, and nobody gets done. And they patrol Vessels Road every single day of their lives, right outside this building, matey. I promise you they're there. And that's half of them never get to a docket. They just want to see what's in it for them. They just scare people shitless. You will lose your job and your wife and your car and your alimony and all the rest of it if you don't go to the auto bank and get as much money out for us as possible.
Well, that's basically
horrible.
What we had.
Extortion.
Right in the beginning, we had three choices. And we say this over and over again. And everybody that is arrested has also got these three choices.
What are they?
You can either first take your punishment, which varies wildly between the worst case being jail and the least case being a criminal record, a suspended sentence, a fine. That's if you get put through the mill all the way through. Secondly, you can, of course, bribe somebody. I mean, we were quoted 40,000 rand each, okay? The guy wanted 10 grand each in his bank account before he would even speak to us, and then we would have had to go meetings.
This is a lawyer in Joburg, yeah.
And he would have made the case go away.
He would have made it go away. But then, of course, they'd just be back because then they'd know that they've got a live one and say, oh, let's go and get some more money from them.
And the third choice?
The third choice is to fight the law. And that's sue the government. Do exactly what we do. Mm. We've got a program called Join the Queue. Join the queue behind us and we'll all go to court together. We now have 22 precedents set across the country. And there's more precedents being set every week where people have done exactly what we do, and we've simplified the process and we've made it very reasonable for people. We've got legal teams behind us. And then what you do is you do exactly the same thing and you get granted a stay in prosecution, which means that your case has been put on hold until after our case is through the Constitutional Court.
Hmm. Yeah, so let's bring hundreds. We expect hundreds and hundreds of people. We're starting.
What kind of... Of economy could we have if this was legal? Because I imagine there are parts of the Eastern Cape and in KZN where you have subsistence farming, where people are at the moment eking out an existence, very rural, very basic. Maybe if they're lucky, they get to feed their families, but they could grow marijuana as a cash crop, I assume?
Well, it is very much a cash crop already. And a lot of people talk about the Green Revolution and how it's going to be this whole new thing. And it's not a new thing. Dakhi has been a form of subsistence in the Eastern Cape, particularly, for hundreds of years. And these poor people down there, they get their crops sprayed by DEA helicopters. They get arrested. They get their livestock confiscated and all of that. So we've always said, don't forget about the Gogo and the Transkei. There's a potential to take that existing cannabis economy and work on it and make a co-op system whereby you have an auction house and a testing facility where people can bring their crops and they can get a reasonable price, and then the crops can be auctioned just like they do with tobacco. There's all sorts of potential. It's vast.
Billions of US dollars. We've got some of the finest grow areas on the planet. And if somebody said today, right, let's legalize this stuff, imagine the influx of tourism from the rest of the world to come and check some of the world's finest. It's legendary.
But what about in places like Holland, for example, where they're now scaling back on this?
Well, there's ideology again, Gareth. It's all to do with a Christian government. It's to do with a nationalist government. They came into power and now they're cleaning up the streets. They were put into power because people are xenophobic, and these guys said, well, we'll get rid of all the foreigners. So they got rid of all the foreigners, and at the same time they thought, oh, no, let's just clean up the streets from those awful hippie people as well. So it's not based on science. It will change. We were there late last year. We were at the Cannabis Cup in Amsterdam last year, and we saw it.
Cannabis Cup, what is that?
Oh man, the world's greatest strains. We were judges at the Cannabis Cup.
You were judges?
Yeah, no, you stay in a complete state of perplexed for a week.
It was too much for me.
All right. We've got our own Dr. Cindy here now. She's a medical doctor. She is one of the people who, I assume, Cindy, you're not a fan.
No, not at all. I mean, look, I've seen enough cannabis-induced psychosis patients to know that it's a real thing. And the difficulty for us, Gareth, is that we don't know who is going to end up psychotic. So you might have one puff of cannabis, and the next thing you're stripping naked and running up and down the streets. You might have 30 puffs and nothing happens. Whoosh. After 30 years of smoking it, you might just end up psychotic. So it is a real thing. It is not a made-up thing. It's something that happens. We see it all the time. And unfortunately, once you've had a psychotic episode, you can't actually go back, you know, to being what you were before. I mean, we saw it at medical school. We had guys that went off their rockers because they were smoking weed. So it's a real thing, and it's a scary thing.
What is a psychotic episode? What is psychotic episode?
Come on, Cindy.
Come on, Cindy. What is this psychotic episode? What are the symptoms, and how long does it last? Does it last a few minutes and everything's back to normal again?
Well, the guy that we had at Varsity, he was admitted to Vescorpis for 3 months. He was taken out of medical school. I mean, he lost all consciousness, like sense of who he was. This is a guy who would walk around naked.
And are you sure it was only the cannabis?
It was only cannabis. We knew him. He was a known cannabis smoker.
And do you think because of that one student when you were at Varsity, do you think that's a reason to put people in jail?
No, it's not one. Remember, I've seen a lot. I used to work in Soweto. We saw a lot of those cases. I worked in Soweto for 9 years. And every other week, you had a patient admitted for cannabis-induced psychosis.
Okay,
it is an entity.
What should we do then? What do you think we should do? Do you think we should eradicate the plant, perhaps? Or do you think we should jail people and make it more punitive that people wouldn't even dare using the plant? What should we do, Cindy? You've told us that people go mull on this stuff. What should we do?
It messes up families.
All right, well, if it does, what should we do?
And he's now sitting at Invescorp, he's not being productive.
Well, come up with a solution for us, because we think we've got a solution, but you might have another one. What's your solution?
No, what's your solution? Let me hear what your solution is.
Our solution is responsible adult use.
I'm saying to you guys that if we had, let me tell you what a good solution would be. If I had a way of screening and figuring out who is going to take a puff and end up psychotic or not, that would be a solution. But we don't.
What about so
you
this?
Could, you could
what
smoke, about the? You could have a puff and end up in Vescorpis. You could have 10 puffs and not end up in Vescorpis. We have no way of knowing. Well, so who wants to take that risk?
What about using the cannabis plant as a medicine to find out if people will end up psychotic in their life?
Who's going
to
be a
What about using it as an indicator? A doctor.
Who's going to be a guinea pig for that? Who's going to do the clinical trials
Well, the clinical trials are a long way off.
Have you guys ever had
a psych? But I'm just saying, who is going to do that? Who's going to volunteer for that?
I have never had one, and I've never seen one.
You've never had a psychotic episode?
No, but I've seen one. You know, going back to the beginning of our conversation, I said I lived at Rustler's Valley for 5 years. And that was 5 years of dealing with people who smoke cannabis all day, every day. It was very much a part of our lives. And in those 5 years, I saw two people have psychotic episodes. And being the sort of feeder of the nation, as it were, when I was there, that it was usually me that had to deal with those people. And I'm not denying that happens. Mm. Okay? But with 20 million people using this plant in South Africa, mm-hmm. there's obviously going to be a few psychotic episodes. But there's no reason to lock people up.
Some people might react badly to coffee. I get a migraine if I have too much coffee.
Yeah, but Gareth, you're not going to break into your granny's house and steal stuff and
excuse me. No.
It's easy. Look, it's easy for you to say.
You show me one case.
It's easy for you to say. Let us go. Let us go to Soweto and let us go to Soweto.
Yes, sure. I'll meet you
there. Let us go to Casualty. And there, we should.
Sure.
We should.
I will go with you to
Bergwijn. No, because I think you need to see both sides of the coin.
We can meet.
It's easy for you to talk about Rustler's Valley and so on, but there's another side to this. There's another coin to this.
We know the other side. We know the other side. We are by
no means
naive.
No, you don't know all of the other side. You know your other side.
I think we know more about cannabis than anybody in South Africa right now, whether it's a psychotic experience or not.
All right, Cindy, thank you. Hey, listen. No, she's she gets very fired up about these things. She cares about them. I like that. I like two groups of people who have opposing views getting fired up about it. It makes me happy. And who knows who's right? All I know is that there are lots of substances that can make people act out. And to my mind, for some it's, for some people, the addiction, the problem, the result of a chemical thing could be a psychotic episode. For some people, it could be irresponsible behavior. For some people, it could be another bad, irresponsible decision comes as a result of that. I don't know. I mean, I'm not in this world, but I do think that there are very many more important things to worry about than the one or two psychotic episodes you might pick up along the way. I don't know. Again, I'm not the expert. Kaya says, "Hi, Gareth. My great-grandfather was a preacher and also a marijuana farmer. He got my gogo and her siblings educated, and they became nurses, teachers, and became positive contributors to the development of this country. Oh, except from one uncle who stole from my great-granddad and became a psycho." So you see,
there's always one in the family.
Yeah, but there's two sides. And Cindy, I mean, surely if we're going to react like this to cannabis, we should also be as angry about alcohol and its effects on society. Am I right? Huh? Am I right? Say it loud.
Yes!
Yes! All right. Don't miss Dr. Cindy's show between 9 and 10 this morning. I have a feeling she might want to have you guys on again.
Maybe.
Cindy wants to know, a different Cindy now, isn't the schizophrenia side of cannabis because pesticides are used by growers?
No, I don't think so.
I think schizophrenia is an inherent, it's in you, and as one of our supporters said quite some time ago, Dacha doesn't make you crazy, but if you are, it'll bring it out. And that's about as succinct as I can think. There are some people that just definitely shouldn't be using this stuff. We saw it in our own lounge a number of years ago with an old friend. She sneaked off with some dacha from our stash in the next minute, just like Cindy says. She's out of control, her clothes are coming off. And in 30 years of using it in the cannabis community all the way around the world twice, I promise you, I've travelled extensively. Mm-hmm. I've never seen it except once in my lounge on an arbitrary occasion. And if we have to legislate continuously against somebody like that who might have an adverse effect, we're all doomed.
Have you had any health side effects personally from the use of the stuff?
Absolutely none that I can.
No. I'm addicted, totally addicted to cigarettes.
Yeah, I live with a junkie.
And I promise you, I battle to try and give it up. But I can go, especially when we're very busy, I can go days and days without even thinking about smoking any weed.
the joke,
but let me go 3 hours where I need a cigarette right now.
Yeah. The joke in our house is by the time it's legal, we've probably finished smoking because we haven't got time to be stoned anymore. The good old days are finished where we used to wake and bake and be particularly useless, and now we're completely on it, and we rarely smoke now.
Well, this is your life's work.
It is at the moment, and it doesn't go away. We're the only people that can't walk away. We are on £1,000 bail, and there's a lot at stake because we had over a kilogram of cannabis in our house, which was the year's harvest. And it sounds like a lot of, but once you've baked it and given it away and been generous with it and two people are using it heavily, it's not a lot of cannabis in the end. It sounds loads in a prohibition environment. He was nailed with a kilo of cannabis. It's loads. It's actually not.
No, I'm fascinated to see how this rolls out. When is the case set for?
March 2016 is High Court, and that's when all the evidence will be led, expert witnesses. Then the High Court will rule on the constitutionality of the matter. So, in other words, does it go to the Constitutional Court or not? Then we'll probably have to, because the government will appeal, because they're very predictable. Supreme Court of Appeal, Constitutional Court.
Well, Julian Myrtle, thank you so much.
Thanks for the invite.
The Dacha Couple. You can go find out more at dachacouple.co.za.
And fieldsofgreen.org.za, our non-profit company, fieldsofgreenforall.org.za. If you are in trouble with the law, if you woke up one morning in a jail, in a prison, get hold of us on Join the Queue. It's just the letter Q, jointhequeue.co.za, and we'll put a legal team together and we'll try and buffer you from the worst harms of prohibition.
Amazing. Amazing that people talk about charity. I mean, you are helping people in a very real way.
We hope so.
All right. And I think the debate between you and Cindy about the effects of this on people's health will go on.
We look forward to it.
I think that everybody's chemical makeup is different.
Completely.
And
yes.
And for some people, any amount of additional chemical doesn't really change very much.
Yeah.
For others, it changes everything. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gareth. What
Myrtle and Julian. Julian Stubbs, Myrtle Clark. They are the Dacha Couple. You can find out more by going to any of those sites that we went through, and we'll put links up on cliffcentral.com too a little bit later on. Thank you. Keep on fighting the good fight.
Thanks.
Thanks. Okay. Keep it green.
Thank you. There's the Dacha Couple, everybody. Cliffcentral.com.